Let's talk a little bit again in terms of practical decision making. We have a couple of cases we want to talk about in terms of tolerability. So Joyce, you had this patient, interestingly, with a RAD51C germline mutation, a 74-year-old woman. Can you talk about what happened to her?
Yeah, so this was her first platinum-sensitive recurrence. She actually had a strong family history of ovarian cancer. Her RAD51C was called a VUS, but given her history, I considered it probably more deleterious, more likely to be deleterious than not. She got carboplatin and liposomal doxorubicin, had a complete response. I put her on maintenance olaparib at the full dose. And about 4 weeks after starting, she just really wasn't sort of keeping up. She had more fatigue. She actually had diarrhea. Her platelet count went down to 99,000. And so given all of the constellation of symptoms, we held her drug. We started olaparib at 250 2 weeks later. Her platelets, you know, held totally fine, but after about 4 weeks, she just, again, she just was like, I can't, like, function. Like, I just can't keep going. And so we held her. We put her back on olaparib 200 milligrams twice a day 2 weeks after that, after she'd recovered her energy. And she's still on maintenance olaparib. She gets a little bit tired, but it's like more of a grade one type fatigue. She gets tired around 4 or 5 p.m., but she's otherwise able to do stuff.
So, Katie, that also gets into the issue of the relationship between dose and toxicity with PARP inhibitors. I'm curious whether this story that Joyce just told is one that you see in your own practice, that you can adjust the dose and have patients tolerate it better.
Absolutely. That's where we talked a little bit about sort of the pre-counseling, you know, reasons to call me, a lot of people don't have I'm really blessed. I have a lot of nursing support, but a lot of people don't have that. But having your nursing support or your whoever answers the phone calls kind of keyed into those key issues. And then using dose interruptions really judiciously, especially for non-hematologic toxicities, patients with sort of grade 2 fatigue, which is really bothersome, or nausea, you can just do a dose interruption for 3 to 5 days. They feel better. You can try and initiate at the starting dose, and if they do, sometimes that's all you need and they do great. Or if it recurs, then you can bring them down a little bit. And the various PARPs have different dose, you know, the number of dose levels varies by the different PARPs. Like niraparib has 3, rucaparib has 5, and olaparib has 4. Did I just make that up, Joyce? 250, 200, 150.
I think olaparib, like technically, I think the tablets haven't gone to 150 in the trials.
But right. But they have the 50s. Yeah, 100s, 50s. Yeah.
But I would say that, that being said, yeah, a patient who isn't tolerating, I would probably go down to 150 BID, even though there's no trial.
I want to get to Stephanie's case. So before we do, Joyce, a couple questions from the audience. Someone in the audience has an 18-year-old woman with stage 3C serous papillary ovarian cancer.
Oh my God.
Any difference in your approach to an 18-year-old, Joyce?
Well, I mean, I think I worry a lot about what is, you know, whether or not she has a genetic predisposition, but it doesn't change sort of my general approach in terms of treatment options and approach towards therapy. No.
I would be sure that there was good pathology review on that. Sometimes it's very hard to tell low-grade serous from high-grade serous in places they don't see a lot.
Juvenile granulosis cell. I would look for a misdiagnosis.
That would be my first thing.
Misdiagnosis.
Rob, what
do you think would be a more likely diagnosis or a possible other diagnosis, Rob?
The ones that are more common. So it's just as Katie said. So we check for low grade, make sure that's there. And also for other tumor types like a germ cell tumor or a stromal cell tumor, like juvenile granulosa cell tumor.
Although so I will say that although it's uncommon, it is not impossible for an 18-year-old.
Right. It's not impossible. Right. Yeah.
I have certainly seen that.
Definitely seen young. Yeah.
So Stephanie, you had a case of a patient who had problems on olaparib and you actually chose to switch. So can you talk a little? I'm curious whether the other faculty has ever tried that and what they see. What happened with your case, Stephanie?
Yeah, so it's a patient that was high-grade serous ovarian cancer, platinum-sensitive recurrence, has responding to the sixth cycle of carboplatin paclitaxel, and then was starting on olaparib maintenance. Usually I give some preventive medication for nausea. And despite the preventive medication for nausea, she still has a nausea. I ask the patient eventually to take a little snack as well with a tablet that sometimes can help. And patients are different in terms of what they want to take as a snack. But despite break, despite some drug holidays or dose reduction, the nausea was really impacting her life. Unfortunately, she was not keen to continue given all this nausea. But given the benefit of the PARP maintenance in the context of a BRCA mutation, we were a little bit concerned not to have a kind of maintenance in that situation. So there's no specific guidelines, there's no specific recommendation, or there's no specific trial assessing that. But we know that there's a class effect in terms of toxicity for the different PARP inhibitor treatment, but there's some slight difference between the PARP inhibitor treatment. So we try to switch her to niraparib to see if she will have maybe less nausea and maybe more tolerable. So it's just early days for her, but I think, I don't know if other of the faculty have any experience about switching to see if that helped the patient or not.
So Neil, I was going to send you another paper, but it was in Science, and I thought I'd spare you. But there is a recent paper that just came out that talks about PARPs into three different classes that may be related to this. And so you can throw niraparib and rucaparib in one kind of class, and then you can put the olaparib and tala in a different class, and veliparib in a third class. And these are different. What they differ by are what they call the allosteric interaction on the PARP molecule. And so they have different effects on this allosteric interaction. And so if you're going to change classes, rather than going from, for instance, from like something in the same class, I would change classes just as Steph did and go to something like a olaparib or to a niraparib. To change the classes just because they have a differential rate on the amount of allosteric interaction and their potential for this toxicity that might be related to PARP trapping.
But there's still something to toxicities. So I think that's true, and that's an amazing paper. But we just had the scenario where I was staffing our fellows clinic. My fellow is super bright about PARP inhibitors. I'm very proud of her. But she's on a patient on niraparib, and she's like, my patient has terrible insomnia. It's the thing that bothers her the most, and she can't sleep.
See?
And I've dose reduced her, and she's just miserable and wants to quit. Yeah, you say that insomnia is really common with the PARP inhibitors, which it is. So I don't know that I can keep her on a PARP. But the key thing with this particular patient, we went down, kind of looked at everything, was she's also had palpitations, and she also had hypertension. So she's more hypertension, she's got palpitations, and she's got insomnia. So it's that dopaminergic certain
pathway
that's very specific to niraparib.
Yep.
Does not exist with olaparib and rucaparib. So in that scenario, it would make sense to switch, not on that allosteric class. So I think you have to think about it as we understand more. I think in the early days we were like, switching doesn't make sense.
Right.
Switch. Now it's like, oh yeah, but from this to this, this depends on